this morning with the sundown shining in him.
Where's the money, Lebowski? Where's the f***ing money, head?
Oh, it's down there somewhere. Let me take another look.
I found my mind in a brown paper bag, but then...
106 miles to Chicago. We got a full tank of gas, half a pack of cigarettes. It's dark, and we're wearing sunglasses.
Hit it.
I tripped on a cloud and fell 8 miles high. I tore my mind on a jagged sky.
Okay, you know, you guys aren't privy to all the new so, you know, that's what you pay me for.
I just dropped in to see what condition my condition was in.
Illinois Nazis. I hate Illinois Nazis.
Now, let's cut through the chase, okay? What are you guys selling?
I lost you $60,000. There is no one who wants to make that money back for you more than I do.
There's just one thing, dude.
What's that?
You have to use so many cuss words.
What the f*** are you talking about?
Don't worry, nobody's listening anyway.
I woke up this morning with the sundown.
Welcome back. Stacks and Jacks. I'm talking about, we got Ricardo on the board. S&P futures up 575. NASDAQ futures up 6. Do we have Professor Carl?
Oh, you do, you do.
How you doing down in Tennessee? It's cold here.
Well, it's kind of cold here, but, you know, you guys, what did I say was going to happen to you this winter?
Once in a while, you can be right. You'd have to be right this time.
Well, you know.
After all, it's only early December. April's a ways away.
Oh, we're not there yet, right?
No.
I mean, and it still could end up being a bust as a prediction.
No, it isn't already. We already got more snow than we did all last year.
Well, you know, there's that. There's also that prediction I made early, well before the hurricane season started, was that the United States was not going to get hit with any named storms. Now that, boy, did I get a lot of guffaws on that one. That one verified too.
Well, it's you could be hired by the Farmer's Almanac.
Well, you know, the thing that's interesting about it is that it, and what drove both those prognostications is a pattern that, at least in my lived experience, has been pretty rare. Right. I mean, like, I'm sure I could go, you know, dig through data tables and stuff and figure out exactly how rare it really is. But, you know, I know what happened the last time it occurred, and, you know, it was a long time ago. I mean, but it was during my, you know, cogent lifetime. So I had a pattern in which to, you know, to model what I expected was going to happen. But, you know, here's an interesting thing. You see this thing, this Time Warner, well, not Time Warner, but, you know, Warner Brothers / Netflix / Paramount nonsense?
Seeing that, I also see this $11 billion takeover by IBM today. I mean, the big just keep getting bigger, or what?
Well, you know, here's a frequently unappreciated part of why antitrust law says that kind of thing is a criminal felony. Of course, we don't put anybody in prison anymore for doing things like this.
Oh, you got all kinds of lawyer dudes telling you it's not really restraint of trade. It's going to help you.
Yeah. Okay. You know, China infamously has this social credit score thing where if you get banged to a substantial degree, you literally can't get on a train to go to work or a bus. Okay. So you end up homeless and in the street because you can't hold a job. All right, now this is real. All right, this is not, you know, this isn't some crazy conspiracy theory. This really does happen over there. You realize that any time you allow monopolist practice to get going, the same thing becomes trivially easy to do in an information-heavy world here in the United States. And in fact, it already does happen in certain lines of business here in the U.S.
Hey, before you get off the weather thing, even though we're sort of already off it, how much of this happening here is what you talked about versus what I read a few weeks ago, some abnormally warm spot in the northern Pacific is causing the jet stream lower.
Well, no, that's not. That's exactly.
No, not off South America. This is up by, off like British Columbia or someplace.
Yeah, well, it's from the it's actually from the ENSO, which is the oscillator in the Pacific Ocean.
Okay, so it's all part of the same deal.
It's all part of the same thing. Yeah, it. But the thing is that normally you have either El Niño or La Niña, okay, and what we had this spring through summer. Is a neutral condition for that, which is extremely unusual. Normally, you have one or the other. All right. Now, of course, to go from one to the other, you pass through neutral, right? Duh. However, it's unusual for it to sit there, and we thought it was shifting. There was, when you looked at the data, it looked like it was shifting this fall, which would have avoided what I thought was going to come this winter. I didn't buy it, and now it's heading back kind of sort of towards neutral, which means the winter prediction is probably going to end up verifying. Certainly has the early part of it, but we'll see if it continues. I mean, that's the question is, when does that pattern break? And Chief, this is way beyond any human's capacity to influence. Okay, I mean, you're talking about.
What do you mean? It's the dude next door with the lawnmower.
Oh my God.
Come on, you gotta get on this. Hey, what do you think of all the other sprinkling of news here this morning? We're not necessarily, but the interesting things that happen now it turns out that NVIDIA can sell all the stuff to China they want that their army needs, as long as somebody gets a 25% cut. Who's that? Who's the somebody? Kirshner?
That's illegal.
I'm just saying that was yesterday's deal.
No, that's blatantly unconstitutional.
What part of the we don't care about the Constitution anymore? Don't you get?
Well, that one. Somebody here's one.
You
of the
didn't things read that headline, I take it.
No, I did read the headline.
Yeah,
and I put an article up on it last night.
Okay, so you're ahead of me. Okay.
Yeah, when it hit the tape, and of course there was this instant spike. I mean, it's only a few dollars, but when you got a company that size, a few dollars is a lot, right?
Yep.
The aftermarket, comes out right after the close.
Oh, 25 billion shares outstanding, a few dollars is a lot.
Yeah, I mean, and you get a $5 or $6 move, instantaneously, and then it kind of bleeds back off.
And NVIDIA's only up $1.99 now. But
yeah, exactly, and the reason
it's only $50 billion.
Well, yeah, it's only $50 billion. But here's the basic problem with this is that export tariffs, no matter how they are structured, and they have been tried several times in different ways, are unconstitutional, blatantly.
This is a kickback.
Well, it's the same thing. So here's the
thing. Wait. Your Supreme Court is meeting today on arguments about political contributions. This will be considered a political contribution.
Yeah, okay.
You think I'm kidding?
No, I know you're not.
I wish I was.
But no, Chief, the reason that I say this is going to get killed is that, okay, so the black letter of the Constitution says you can't do that. Then there's also the fact that this has been tried in different ways many times throughout American history, all right? This is not a new strategy.
The Supreme Court's backed up for 2 years.
Well, okay. Here's,
and by the way, they're all in his hip pocket.
By the way, the last time this was tried was apparently with IBM. At least that's the most recent case I can find, where they tried to do this by essentially very sneaky indirect method by laying a tax on insurance that covered international shipments of those things.
Yeah.
Okay. Now you want to talk about a convoluted, sneaky, backdoor kind of way to do something, all right? I mean,
it's beautiful, isn't it? It's beautiful.
I'm just saying, now, of course, this was a long time ago in a galaxy far, far away, right? So, I mean, we're not talking
about another example of why I'm so jealous of people who have that kind of imagination, because I don't.
I'm just saying, this was, I mean, you want to talk about somebody who actually, how do we hide the sausage in a way that we probably get away with this? And it ended up in front of the Supremes, and they killed it. So and they said, absolutely effing not. The intent of this is clear.
Yeah, but we don't have Supremes quite like we have now.
Well, I, you know, we'll see.
I thought the Catholicism of a few of these people, I know religion shouldn't be part of, and the morality would trump the MAGA stuff for these people, but evidently, if there is a Pearly Gates, and the big guy says, what would you want to do one time, Tom, I would say, well, there's probably a few things there, but the top of my list would be to go to listen in like a cockroach on the wall to one of these interviews where the president interviews the Supreme Court candidate when they basically sell their soul to whoever the idiot is and somehow feel that 30 years later they still owe the guy even though he's not even a president anymore. I would love to be one of them. Then have the person come out with this incredible lawyer, you know, all this kind of stuff, tell you how they will not judge anything until they see it in front of them, when in fact the guy just said, were you on this? And I don't know if the whole party decides to go kill their dog if they don't or what happens, but the loyalty that these people show to the morons that put them in, even though they have a lifetime appointment, I mean, the Constitution has everything in the world to do to say you don't have to have that loyalty anymore, they still do. And I don't quite get it. I honestly don't.
Well, it's, as I have often observed, there is a point at which corruption gets so ridiculous that it's the only way to get ahead of anything because the other guy is doing it. And if you don't, he's going to kill you. All right. So, I mean, it's there were problems with this kind of stuff when, you know, all the way back when I was running MCS in certain areas of, I had to be extraordinarily bare-knuckled in places that I really would have rather not been. But I had to because there really wasn't an alternative if I wanted to survive as as running a company, right? But today, you have to find some way to actually break. I mean, I never had to cross a line where I had to break black letter law. I had to call out other people who were doing it, but there were times that I couldn't get anyone's attention even though other people were doing it, and so there were certain areas of business that I'm like, well, you know, I don't want to be involved in this because my options are break the law myself or lose. Right? I mean, those are the options. I don't like those options. So this is an area where I'm just going to stay out of it because, yeah. Of course, if it ends up as part of your core competence in what you do, you've got problems, right? I mean, what option do you have then? Don't have one.
Back in my ute, when I was a trader on a CBOE for 20 years, CBOE, unlike the Board of Trade, and I can give you stories, and unlike the New York Stock Exchange, and I can give you stories, never really made it to the regulators in their back pocket spot.
Yeah.
So the people there were absolutely crazed about, we didn't want any cheating going on because we didn't want our livelihood shut off. And you had some people that, you know, on their own devices would have been idiots. But we never ever let it get to the spot where if you weren't cheating, you weren't trying. And I sort of got this weird idea that maybe part of the rest of the world was like that, and it was really a bad education in that regard.
Yeah, well, hello,
yeah.
Especially now.
Yeah.
And I mean, it's the insanity of it that we have today is just utterly ridiculous.
By the way, did you spot that your plutocratic buddy, Elon Musk, after getting a fine from the European Union, wants to disband the union?
Oh yeah, well, of course.
I'm not a big fan of the European Union, by the way, but the idea that a company, isn't that the definition of plutocracy?
Well, you know, it's interesting in what the EU is pissed off about and what they want to fine him for, is that he has refused their demands to change the way that his so-called blue checkmark thing works. Okay, now I have, as I said, part of the problem you have with the whole monopolist thing and the consolidation is that it ends up being used not just as a tool of price discrimination. That's bad enough. It's used as a tool to literally force you into the streets.
Well, it's also become a... They are... The squeal like a stuck pig if somebody censures them. They want to be the censor.
Well, yeah, and by the way, just if you go after any aspect of this and they take notice of you, if you have a monopoly, they can literally force you out of areas of commerce or out of commerce entirely. All right, now think about this. If there's only one place you can buy groceries and those guys get to the point that they know who you are before you come in the store, they can literally prevent you from eating.
Well, we've had people, that's why the Clayton Act doesn't want vertical integration. If all of a sudden somebody buys the wholesaler then won't sell to your competitor on the retail side.
Well, Clayton, like Sherman, criminalizes the attempt to monopolize.
Sherman is broader, and for a long period of time, people felt that the Sherman Act was basically didn't have any balls. But in fact, it does, because it is broader. But the Clayton actually puts down specific things you can't do, where Sherman really doesn't.
Well, and the other thing is that Clayton, and they both carry the same felony criminal penalty.
Where does the Robinson-Patman Act fit in there? I never was a big
study of that. Robinson-Patman is one that I shoved up the backside of some of my vendors during the time that I was running MCS. Robinson-Patman says that you cannot discriminate on price for purchases of like kind and quantity where said thing travels in interstate commerce. Now, virtually everything, and of course that's because the federal government's jurisdiction ends within interstate commerce. Okay, so if something
you can do some sort of quantity discounts, but
quantity discounts are not that like kind and quantity.
Right. Okay.
Okay. So the exact language is like kind and quantity. So if you want to buy 100 $1,000 things, and someone else wants to buy $100,000 things, same warranty terms, same payment terms, you know, you're both net 30 billed, whatever have you. Yeah, if you turn around and you say this guy gets it for $700 and you pay $1,000, that's a problem.
Do we have anybody even the Justice Department has any idea what you just said? No.
Good God. You know, this is the thing that really gets me is that when you look at like some of this stuff with drugs, for example, okay, drugs absolutely all travel in interstate commerce. All right, they're not made and manufactured, distributed, sold entirely within the boundaries of a state.
Well, baseball's in the boundaries of a state.
Well, okay, baseball's got that, you know, exemption that they got a little carve out thing in there. But by the way, this doesn't apply to Robinson-Patman does not apply to services at all.
Okay. Yeah,
only physical goods. But it does, and as I said, I successfully shoved this up a couple of vendors' back doors because they were, you know, favoring the one customer of theirs who happened to be a competitor of mine over me. No, they weren't.
That's the whole reason to not have this vertical integration, because you can essentially put a competitor one level out because you control the level above it.
Right, exactly. And so, you know, the thing is, though, is that there's...
They even teach that in law school now? I don't think so.
You know, Chief, nobody cares about any of this stuff anymore.
No.
All right?
They got in front of them. All they do is complain. They don't even know why they're complaining.
Yeah, but when you get all this, you know, when you stack all these things up, it makes, you know, and then you add the international component to it, where you have the intellectual property theft and things like this, it makes the entire concept of trying to set something up, it you know, as a small business and grow it, it makes it an untenable enterprise. Because if you get identified as having something that actually does have some value, all right, I mean, you know, running a local bar, okay, whatever. But when you actually...
Well, your competition, you know, in the world now pretty much stops at maybe corn farms, soybean farms, running a local bar, and running a barbershop. That's probably about it.
Well, you know...
There's a few more.
One of the things, I mean, you know, this ADP report that was out, small business is getting butt pounded.
Well, just drive by the open places.
Well, I'm just saying. Yeah. But, you know, I mean, that's what the data says, right? Is that medium and large businesses, you know, added jobs last month, according to ADP. Of course, you know, they're, I don't know how they can not actually count, but apparently they can't. Nonetheless, that's their data. But small business has been losing employment all year long, and last month was really bad. Now, we're not going to get that number. I mean, it was like neg 120 or something like that. It was, I mean, you know, considering that the, you know, the component, the overall components, that's a nasty number, right?
What load of crap are we getting on the 16th?
Well, we're going to get the, we'll get the BLS data, supposedly, for November.
We're never going to get October, right?
October is never going to be.
But I mean, something happened between September and November. It can't be a blank spot.
Well, but it will be in the government data because they never collected it. So you can't report what you don't have, because the people weren't there.
Well, but if
I'm just saying they didn't run the survey.
I'm trying not to be a math person here because I'm not. But
if
that many people are employed in November versus September, somewhere between November and October, they got hired.
No, really?
Yeah.
But, you know, all I'm pointing out is that there's, we're going to get this supposed number, right? The Fed doesn't have it, supposedly. We're going to get their interest rate thing, you know, and that's coming. And then you're going to get this. And of course, you know, the market's kind of levitating here saying, oh, you know, rate cuts. Hey, I got news for you. We've had several of those. The rates on mortgages have gone the wrong way, right? The TNA,
one of these days we're going to get a rate cut and the market's going to be down 4%.
You think? Yeah. And the thing is that now, just in the last, the last little while here, the last 2-3 weeks, we've seen quite a bit of steepening between the 13-week and the 10-year. So, you know, that's rather interesting, too, because we're getting awfully close to, you know, where we were right after, the inauguration, which that spread, the high, the 12-month high on that was 5.96, and it's trading 5.54 right now. So that's that's an indicator that anyone can put up on their screen really easily because, you know, the IRX and the TNX are both, quoted.
By the way, were your ears burning Saturday night?
Uh-oh. What were you doing to me Saturday night?
I was mentioning my friend Carl because a couple of topics came up. Plus, the lady who had this little party, they cook cookies for everybody. They cook them. Some of them, I think, go to the veterans' home and whatever. But the remainder is end up at this party.
Well, that's nice.
Yeah, it's very nice. Terrific group. If you don't mind being the only male there with all these very, very sharp females. You know, you got to be a lean dog to break into that pack, as my uncle used to say. Anyway, not only were we had young Katie was there. Remember, she's been on the show a couple times talking about the research she did.
Yeah.
And not only that, the reason why I thought of you is Kathy, who ran the party. Used to work for Southern Beverages, and the array of good booze. She broke up open a whistle pig for him, and I'm thinking, I bet Carl.
Oh,
would like
that's
it.
Some good stuff.
Yeah. So, but two things. One is, the bad news is his friend of Kathy and Dye's, this African-American gentleman, I went out with him like a year ago for his birthday. He's probably 80-ish. And he was giving me the story about growing up in Mississippi in those days and how his mother died in the house because she went out for the coat hanger abortion and bled to death. And how, you know, there was no doctor within like 30 miles. And only that wasn't the big thing. There was no car to get you there. You had to borrow somebody's car when they came home from work. You know, he broke his arm playing football and never went back to get the cast off. Just in 5 weeks, he took the cast off, and the guy did a good job. Anyway, poor guy gets cancer like last February, lung cancer. I don't remember if he was a smoker or not. And sure enough, like last week, you know, he dies. So I'm thinking that's pretty much the time frame, like 9 months. Even with all the stuff they throw at you and make life miserable, it didn't seem to deter him at all. And I'm sure he went and got whatever they did to him for the 9 months, and I'm thinking, this is right up Carl's alley. I mean, who knows what chemos and whatever they gave the guy, and he probably didn't last any longer than he would have done nothing. The other
But I'll tell you what, it sure made him a lot of money, didn't it?
Yeah, and the other one was, Katie was talking about, she's got into, well, she actually had a big debate whether she could go to Yale or Cornell for doing some research, and she's also going to be a PA. And she ended up picking Yale. I didn't realize Cornell's medical school was in Manhattan, but evidently it is. Her hospital and stuff is there. I said, "You're going to go up to Ithaca?" And she goes, no, it's in Manhattan. I didn't know that. Anyway, she picked Yale. But she's telling me now she's working for some group that they do, they must do medical stuff for people who can't afford it or whatever. And she says the laws essentially screw themselves. She goes, if somebody comes in with an infection of some kind or a broken arm or whatever it is, the law says you have to treat them.
Right. That's EMTALA, which was a Reagan thing.
Well, whatever it is, you have to treat them. But she goes, the problem is there's no money. There's no money for any sort of follow-up or anything else.
Right.
So she goes, you end up, if somebody screws themselves or doesn't, you don't monitor the infection, you come right back in and you have to do the same operation again. She goes, it ends up being way more expensive than if you actually had some treatment afterward.
Yeah,
not to mention, it's a bad thing for the person.
Well, of course, they don't care about that either.
No.
You know, it's they're spending their entire time while somebody in the back office, while the doctor is, you know, setting the arm or whatever it is trying to figure out how to make you pay that guy's bill.
Well, yeah.
Okay. You know, I mean, that's the whole gambit. But, you know, this we've still got these rumblings going on about how, oh, you know, we've got this terrible problem with the Obamacare subsidies. Duh, hello. Of course, the bottom line issue is that this isn't something that hasn't been known, all right? Trump and the Republican Congress have been around now for almost a full year, right? I mean, you know, duh.
Well, plus they were there for 4 years a while ago.
Well, but almost a full year. Now, this was after the, you know, the pandemic changes that Biden's administration put in with the enhanced subsidies. But the point is, they knew they were going to expire at the end of December. They've been there for almost a full year, and they literally have sat on their you-know-whats, all right? And I'm not talking about butt either. Right, they've been sitting on their wieners, doing absolutely nothing. Now all of a sudden, however, no action. Okay, so and the basic problem is this: you can't when you have an exponential ramp, and again, October's MTS showed this very clearly in CMS. You cannot continue to subsidize into that because you'll destroy the ability to fund it. It will blow up in your face.
When you see Joel, let me know. I think two things are happening though, Carol. One of them is what you're talking about. The total expenses are ramping up like there's no tomorrow. But
yeah.
what I'm sensing and reading and actually been talking to people, the amount of people that are totally bagging out of the whole system and don't have any coverage whatsoever, that's ramping up too. They're both happening, which is bizarre.
It's not bizarre. It's what
happens. Well, but it's bad. Not
well,
bizarre.
It's bad. All right, but here's the thing. The only way to go at this, the only way that you can actually do something that will work is to go after cost hard.
Without a doubt. And how come nobody else seems to know that?
Well, nobody wants to do it because it means that the building that is right next to the hospital that's full of billing clerks, they never treat a single person, but they're all making 50, 60, 70 grand a year. Every one of those people gets fired.
Well, the listener who was asking me a while back now, I have no idea whether the lady died or didn't, was asking me because we had talked one time about other countries. I just got this real quick email and I just sent one back and I gave her 10 minutes of research. I can't believe that the cost of chemo here is what, 5 grand to 50 grand, and over in India it's 500 to 2,000. It's the same stuff.
Yeah. It's precisely the same thing. And it's, well, it's, you know, when my sister was still on it, I've told this story before. She had Hep C, okay? Sovaldi is a cure for Hep C. Right? It's an actual cure. It's one of the few drugs that actually does what they say it does. And she didn't have $90,000. I said, get your butt on a plane, go over to India. It's $1,000 for the entire course of treatment.
It actually is. There's a couple other drugs that put it in abeyance, but this is actually a cure, but it's a shot every week for...
No, it's a pill, but it's 3 months.
Okay, I think it originally started out as a shot, but it's one something a week for 3 months.
It's actually a dose a day. It's 90.
Okay.
It's 90 day. It's a
pill. But it's $1,000 a day.
Here.
Yeah.
In India, it's $1,000. Period.
Well, I got a little hint for you. It's not necessarily that here either. It depends.
Oh
on
no,
how
no,
you...
I know that. It depends on this and that and you know whatever, right?
How does when you talk about as soon as Joel's on, we'll push this to Friday, but
yeah.
How does the rabbits and Pittman, how do these pharmacy benefit managers get around, get through, do something with the Robinson Pathman Act?
No, nobody. You've got to have somebody that's willing to bring the charge.
Because when I'm talking, somehow or another, if Carl and I, can you imagine us being in business? If we might open up a, which nobody ever does now, a independent pharmacy. If we went to Merck or somebody like that, or whoever's putting the drugs out, I think we get the same price as, say, Walgreens or CVS.
Ha, 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 ha.
Well, okay, let me finish. Because I think if we just went as a firm, we would. But somehow or another, that's why CVS bought this pharmacy. There's people can get in the middle of that.
Right.
Called a firm, and I don't know really how that happens. And John Dyer was on one day explaining this, but it was a few years ago. I wonder if I could get him back someday. But he goes, it's somehow or another, they can get, I'll use the term, kickback from... In other words, if they can direct, say, the steelworkers union to Walgreens or something,
right,
and to use this drug, somehow or another, they get a kickback from the manufacturer, way more than Walgreens does on their own. I don't know about you and me, but the middleman gets something, and somewhere along the line, these guys, I won't say it was John's place, but somebody he knew was the pharmacy benefit manager for like a state prison system or something.
Yeah.
And the amount of people in the state prisons that had hepatitis C was way higher than general population, correct?
Well, yeah, go figure, right? I wonder how that happened.
So the state says, we want you guys to cover the, you know, the $1,000 a week for like all these guys, and they're like, wait a minute, your premiums don't cover that necessarily. And right. So somehow or another, whoever makes this stuff you're talking about, they ended up cutting some sort of deal between the state and the manufacturer of the stuff, to where they ended up doing really well on the deal. And I don't know how the hell that happened, but somehow. But now I don't think a straight doctor or hospital or standalone pharmacy like ours can do that. I don't know what powers these benefit managers have to get in the middle of all this mess, but
Chief,
they do.
Chief, it's a scam. Anyway, Joel's up, and I'm now taking from his time. So
all right, buddy. We'll talk to Joel. Talk to you on Friday, if not sooner.
Bet.
Joel, how are you, buddy?
Good morning, Chief. Good morning. I tell you, I'm perplexed here. I mean, as much as I, you know, can cheer against Notre Dame at, you know, particular times, I mean, you guys got screwed over.
As you can imagine, I've gotten about 100 texts from my buddies. Given the structure, which is really screwed up, I don't know that they necessarily got screwed. I mean, why James Madison is in there and Tulane, that's the problem. It's really not the top 12 teams; it's the top 10, and there's two others. And I have this issue with football. I mean, you and I can be on a basketball team, and we could be horseshit, and all of a sudden there's some scam in the NCAA thing where we go up and play Duke, and so what? We lose by 50 points. Nobody gets hurt. It's not. Or we can play softball against a good team, and guess what? They're up by 15 in 5 innings. You go to the bar early. What's the difference? But when you play football, it's a whole different problem. You're manhandling people if you're that much better. I've got, what I have yesterday, I sent it out to everybody. The payroll at Oregon is something like, you know, $40 million. The payroll at James, the entire budget of the entire athletic department is at James Madison is $1.5 million. They've got no business playing each other. It's like the Bears playing Mount Carmel, for God's sake. I mean, it's a whole different, what are you trying to even up here? Injuries? I mean, we're not even, what planet are they from? But then on the other part of it, I think there's three issues, two of which I sort of agree with. I don't think Alabama should have dropped down by playing an extra game against somebody higher in the standings. I don't think losing to Georgia should have dropped them below Miami or Notre Dame. I really don't. I mean, even though my buddies think that's the truth. The other is, for some reason, Miami seemed to have degraded a little during the year and the Irish got better. So even though they lost the first game in the last second, a long time ago, and for some reason for the last 8 weeks, Miami has been ranked below Notre Dame. Now, what changed this week? I don't get that. But the fact is, they both should be in, and James Madison and Tulane should be out, I think. Well, now, where am I wrong here?
No, you're correct. I mean, I mean, there was a clear message sent to Notre Dame: join a major conference.
I don't necessarily.
You think
so? I wanted them in there. I actually think they could have beat just about anybody. But here's the deal, Joel. They played two good teams early in the year, which is their own fault. They lost them both in the last minute. From then on, they played the two crappiest teams in the Big Ten. They played the people from the ACC, and they played a service academy.
Didn't they play USC?
Oh, okay, they were in the Big Ten. All right, so two of the three crappiest teams. Yeah. They played Purdue and Stanford. Yeah. I mean, it wasn't their fault. Those teams were good when they scheduled them. It's not like...
I know.
It came down to essentially a coin flip between them and Miami, given the structure. And if the easiest way to do it is say, by the way, do they have a head-to-head? And they did. I'm very sorry they're not in there. I actually think they could have won. And I wanted to see Jeremiah Love play again. The guy's fantastic. And so are other people on the team. And they're way better than the day than the season started. It's horrendous. But the problem is the other two teams. The problem, I don't think, is the Alabama-Miami thing. That's just my opinion. So I don't know where that puts me, but...
No, I mean, you have a very level-headed approach to it.
Unlike my friends from Notre Dame, just
the whole state of college football. I mean, it's changed and it's not coming back. And you know, it's all about the money for the networks and the bowl games and everything.
I think the networks would rather have Notre Dame than James Madison.
Oh hell yeah!
Yeah.
Oh yeah! This was not. This was not a network call. By the way,
Stanford's in the ACC, but they still were crummy.
Yeah. I think we got a tough bowl game. You know,
yeah.
I think you know, going against Texas.
Idea of why anybody wants to play a bowl game now is beyond me. Because anybody from Michigan that's going to the NFL is not going to play.
Yeah. Well, unfortunately, I don't think we have any.
Well, Texas probably does.
But anyways, Chief, I'm running solo today on pre-market prep. My boy Dennis and Brent are on vacation, so I'm running the ship over there. So you want to do a brief market talk? We can do that.
What time do you want me?
Consolidation station near the high of the move. Fed is going to – I think it's going to be a hawkish cut tomorrow. We'll see. I mean, that's what the market, at least that's the feel right now. I think they're going to get the quarter, and we say we're going to be conservative about the first half of the year, and let's see how the market digests that information. That's my take. But as far as a technical basis, we're consolidating near the highs of the move, and you know what that means.
No.
If you're following technical analysis, you keep going higher. Throw seasonality in there too.
What time do you need me in? Let me know.
I got you a date. date, and I may get you another date here in December.
Right. Oh, fair enough. I'm doing Christmas Eve. That'll be fun.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Yeah.
Yes. Okay.
All right, bud. You take care of yourself, and the show will be fine with you. You can handle it, bud. I know that.
Oh, actually, you know what? I'm going to have to email you. I think I might have sent you the wrong date. It might be the week before Christmas.
All right, whatever. Whatever. I'm at your disposal.
Thank you. Right. Go Blue. Oh, we didn't get a chance to talk hoops. We're now number two. I love the depth. Michigan is a basketball school. Go Blue.
All right, bud. Do we have Kenny?
No Kenny yet, but we have Hal, though.
You mean we got Carl? We got Hal?
Hal.
We still have Carl?
No, Carl.
Well, how are you, bud? If Kenny might plow in here a second, he said he'd be on this week. He let me know last week he wasn't going to be here.
Oh, okay. Yeah, sorry. I was just listening. I was waiting for, you know, Kenny to finish. But hey, I'm game.
What my guys? My phone is lit up since I mentioned both sides of the story on this thing with the football. And
yeah,
of course, you know,
setting a tournament is really difficult. They have a problem in the NFL too. You have a 8-8 division winner, you know, in the fourth slot, and you'll have like a team in a different division at, you know, I don't know, with three losses, having to play on the road at a division winner that is 8-8. I mean, so you know, it's not just college football. They have the issue in NFL football too. I just can't stand. And then, my goodness, they got this convoluted catch rule. Did you see the controversy in that Steelers game?
I did not.
Where the guy held the ball in the end zone away from the defender, and at the last second, the defender knocked that out of his hand before he took his third step. The catch rule is so stupid in football. If you have 2 feet on the ground and you have possession, it's a catch. End of story. Who cares what happens after that? You know,
there's a different rule in the end zone. I remember the Bears.
Yeah, but in college football, you have to hold it to the ground. In college, if you have the ball in your hands and you have control and your foot touches, one foot touches, game over, it's a freaking catch. You know, you have just these convoluted rules that just make, and then you got to watch the officials review it over and over and over for 5 minutes.
Oh, yeah.
In the NFL, it's ball, 2 feet. Who cares what happens after that? In college, it should be ball and 1 foot. And who cares what happens after that?
Do we have Kenny?
Just make it easy.
Yes, we do.
Okay. Well, hang on for a second, for a little bit. Hal, we have Kenny.
Oh, yeah,
Mr.
no problem.
Kenny.
I'm going to get my coffee.
Kenny, how are you, buddy?
I'm good. How are you?
Doing all right, except I attempted to explain a little bit the thinking on this. How Notre Dame got out, and even though I'm disappointed they are not in, I can follow the thinking of some of the other people and just say that's hard for my Notre Dame friends to deal with. they have the committee members all from the SEC and ESPN, and not, I mean, guys, the way the thing is set up is pretty messed up. Why we end up having, you know, James Madison going to play Oregon, I have no idea, when obviously there's teams that are better than that. You know, so then it comes down to there's always somebody. It's like the NCAA. There's 15 teams in there that don't belong in there, so some team that does, that would easily be ranked ahead of any of those teams, never gets in. It happens every year. You know, I don't know how you solve that, but I think in football you should solve it more appropriately, because in football people get hurt, and you don't really want your kid playing against somebody who's 50 pounds heavier and getting paid when your kid isn't. It's not the same as basketball or softball in terms of injuries, at least. I mean, I go up against a guy bigger than me in basketball, what happens? I just lose, right?
Right. I mean, I fell off. I got disconnected for a minute, so I just jumped back on. But yes, you're right. You play someone bigger than you in basketball, you lose.
You just lose. But in football, you're liable to get murdered. You know, a big difference.
Yeah, exactly.
So the idea of evening up the schedule by putting a $40 million payroll against a $1 million payroll, I don't see how you get that. What are we looking for?
Yeah, right.
You know, we're trying to play Hoosiers every year or what?
Yeah.
You know. But anyway, what do you make of this market? I have actually several new clients, Kenny, with concentration issues. The VIX is higher than the moon.
Yeah.
It puts her way more expensive than I would like in just about every one of these equities, even the ones that trade a lot. The cost of insurance is very high because I think maybe it ought to be.
Yeah.
Yet it's very difficult to just start buying protection just right out of the gate, because, you know, if you don't want the market to crash, and if it doesn't, then you're sitting there throwing money at stuff. And, you know, I don't know if I've ever seen a more difficult time, because I usually have my straight way of doing this, and I'm trying to find all kinds of different ways now to mitigate here, but it's hard to do.
Yeah, no, I hear you. But listen, I think the market is doing just kind of what I've been saying all along as we move into the end of the year, is that now, you know, the market's up, the NASDAQ's up 22%, the S&P's up 16.5%, the Dow's up 12%. And so now they're just going to try to hold it here for the next 3 weeks, right? They don't want to necessarily have anything that's going to really disrupt it, which is why I think tomorrow, you know, we're going to get the 25 base point cut. I don't think that Jay Powell is going to lay out a very specific plan in the new year. I think it would be foolish for him to do that, considering he's already a lame duck anyway, and it's going to be Kevin's choice now, kind of on how to direct the group. But look, there is division in the group. There's clear division. There are clear people on both sides of this argument about should we or shouldn't we cut. And I think it's going to be very contentious. In the end, I think they will cut. But I think he's going to be, if anything, I think he's going to be much more cautious about, you know, what investors should expect and what the market should expect in the new year, right? I don't think we're going to get a cut in January, nor do I think we're going to get one in March. I think the next cut is going to come after the new Fed chair takes, takes hold of that seat. Unless, of course, the economic data suddenly just falls off the edge in the next month or two, which I don't see that happening either. But, you know, we're going to find out as we start to get all that all the data that that we've been missing for a couple of months. As that starts to funnel in and we get back to some sense of normalcy, then we'll get a look at you know, NFP, at what the unemployment rate is now versus making what it was in August.
Without making any political statement, just looking at this like you're managing money because you are, yep. where you really can't be political.
Right.
I personally don't think we're ever going to get a real number out of this group.
Well, a real number, which real number are we talking about?
Any number you're talking about, CPI, you name it, we're never going to get a real number.
Right.
The PCE number. We have a group that wants interest rates lower because it benefits a certain group of the society. And right. Obviously it's been driven into people's heads now for 10 years, and we're not going back the other way. You can use a gross number of the, you know, retail sales is fine or Christmas sales is fine. But you got one guy buying a yacht, you don't have 1,000 guys buying a bass boat. I mean, and that's the split we've had in the economy now for a while, and it's getting seemingly worse by the day.
Which is exactly why they should not cut rates. I'm in the camp that they shouldn't cut. I don't think we should cut in December. We're going to get it. I didn't think we should have cut last month, but they did. I agree with you. There is, and the more they cut rates, then the more that division is once again gonna be created, right? And so that's one reason. The other reason is I'm clearly afraid that they're going to reignite the inflation monster like they did in 1980. And I hate to keep saying it, but you know, you and I still have nightmares about what that was like in 1980, 81, 82, what happened to the economy, talk about job losses and a disaster. Yeah, it was 2 years of a real struggle. Did prices come down? Sure they did, in everything. And by the way, that's the only way you're going to get prices to really come down, is the Democrats are screaming and yelling now that, you know, Trump hasn't brought prices down. Guess what? The only way they're going to come down now is if you have a real recession. And you and I both know that, right? They're elevated after the Biden years, and they're stable now, but they're not going higher at the rate they were, but they're not necessarily coming down either. Yeah, you've seen, you know, energy prices come in a little bit. Okay, that's great. That should help transportation. That should help a little bit. But if anyone thinks we're going back to prices, you know, pre-COVID or pre-2007, we're not. Unless we have a real bad recession in this country, something that the Fed doesn't want to do. And I agree. I don't necessarily want to go there either. But I'm afraid if they continue to cut, that we're going to see inflation really rear its ugly head, and then we're going to be put in that same position as Paul Volcker was.
Well, one thing that could happen, and I don't necessarily know how they've managed to avoid it, I think it has to do with concentration and all the stuff we were talking about with Carl, antitrust and everything. If, I use the term, these idiots do cut half a point, if somehow, some way, which we know is never going to happen, if the credit card interest rate actually did go down a half, I wouldn't be so bad about it, but it never will. It's gone up. I did a study, Kenny, over a 10-year period, and I did it a few years ago, when the rates went from, the Fed rates went from like 4.5 down to like zero or whatever, it got down to a half or a quarter of a percent or something, the credit card rates were actually up. So if everybody actually danced to the same drummer, I wouldn't have much of a problem with it. But that's not what happens. Some people, and Hal's been talking about it, and we'll talk about it some more today, and he dug through, I don't know if you've listened to any of those shows, anybody, I would think if we could put them together for you, Hal has been digging through the various laws regarding banks, Dodd-Frank and the other one where Greenspan got rid of the reserve requirements, and what was that? That was the after 2008 Act. I keep forgetting the name of it. But and how we've gone from this reserve requirement thing, which you and I grew up with, to we don't have any reserve requirement. We have this bank capital requirement. And it's funny. We talked to Larissa last week, and she teaches. She's not really teaching money in banking right now, but she goes. She thinks in a lot of the money in banking classes, they still talk about reserve requirements. Nobody even knows what this new capital thing is, and yet it's been around for 5 years. But anyway, Hal's point is, it absolutely penalizes anybody who gives loans to smaller companies. I mean, your capital requirement on a $1 billion loan to Amazon is amazingly less than 100 loans that add up to $1 billion to 100 other people. Which,
right.
I mean, did people do that on purpose, or did somebody, is that just an unintended consequence of some stupid law? Somehow or another, the deck is absolutely stacked against small business all across the line, and I refuse to believe that it's just accidentally happened that way. I mean, my view of people has gotten different as I've aged. I think all this stuff is done on purpose, and the other people someday find out why they did it, and they wonder, how the hell did that happen? I mean, reserve requirement to me makes a lot more sense, but right now, the advantage is all big, and not to mention, it's a lot easier in terms of personnel to give one huge loan than a bunch of little ones, right? You don't even need anybody to give them.
Yeah.
I mean, my biggest basic bitch with the Fed over the 10-year period is while they were lowering these rates, and it's always in the news, and it's all you and I ever talked about, the fact is, for most people, they didn't go down at all.
That's right. I agree with you. It made no difference at all. But listen, they were lowering those rates, then they held them, and you and I have had this conversation. Then they held them there for way too long.
Yep.
Way too long. They should have the Fed should have started raising rates when was it? December of 2020?
Well, it wasn't too long. If you had a 1% loan, it wasn't long enough, Kenny.
Right. Right.
Right. Right. I mean, duh. It's which boat are you on? Are you on the dinghy or are you on the Queen Mary? I mean, we're on the dinghy, bud.
Right. But that's the problem, because they've conditioned a whole generation of people out there to think that was normal, when you and I both know damn well it was not normal by any stretch.
No.
Nor was the 1980s 21% interest rates. That wasn't normal either, right? So it's got to come back to somewhere in the middle, which is where I think we are right about now. I think we're right in the middle of the historic range. Which is why I'm not in this camp that they should cut at all. I hope he comes out today and says he's not going to. I don't think he's going to, because the market's already betting 100%. And if he came out today and said he, or tomorrow and said he's not cutting, the market would shit the bed. They would just create holy, they'd create hell for everybody.
Well, it has to do with the easy money piece.
Correct.
And in the market, because we have, are we still at record margin loans? We were a month ago. The market is creating the money supply. I mean, it's the stuff goes up every day. Some of these stocks. I mean, it's the amount of wealth being created here is dramatic. It has nothing to do with income. It's just wealth. I mean, it's like tulips, all their stock. I mean, how high is this stuff going to go?
Right.
But the question is, I think they're not going to stop doing it though, Kenny. I really don't. I don't see someday maybe we might get a rate cut and the market's down that day because long-term rates flip the other way. But so far, I think that everybody's all in on this.
The closer we get to tomorrow, the closer we get to rate cuts, look what's happened to the 10-year and 30-year yield. We've gone from 3.98% a week and a half ago to 4.16% this morning on the 10-year.
Yeah.
And, and the 30-year went from, I think it was a low of 4.58 or maybe 4.62%. A week and a half ago, now it's at 4.79%. So the bond market is telling you something different than what the Fed is trying to shove down our throats, right?
Well, it's the inflation number, and I can't believe we actually spent a week in the news talking about the PCE report. Kenny, what is that? You can't get detail anywhere. My 3-year-old grandniece could come up with that number, and nobody would know the difference, would they? Where does it even come from?
Yeah, right. Yeah, where does it even come from? That's like the big secret. Where does it come from?
It's their preferred rate. Well, who is it? Where is it? We can't tell you. Okay.
Yeah.
Wasn't there a TV show like that where it was, who made that decision? Well, I can't tell you, or something like that.
Yeah. So I suspect that tomorrow is going to be the after tomorrow. I think the markets are just going to churn into the end of the year. I think European markets are going to get very quiet. And I think U.S. markets are going to get very quiet. Like I said, to kind of just hold it here, we'll go out with a bang, right? With the market once again performing very well, considering in January there was a lot of mixed commentary about, you know, Trump was the president, what was going to happen? Oh my God, the world was going to end, this, that, and the other thing, and none of that happened, right?
Well, he's trying.
Well, okay, we can talk about that on another.
He's doing the best he can, but we're pretty resilient.
You know, and they're already coming out with, the 2026 projections. I think Deutsche Bank and Oppenheimer are looking for the market to be up 17%. The S&P up 17%. They get 8,000 numbers on their S&P, right? Up 17% from where we are today. Bank of America, I think, is the most cautious. They're only looking for a 4% rise in the S&P. And J.P. Morgan's right smack in the middle at 10%. They think that's what it'll return. And remember, in January, that's kind of what the market was expecting, kind of a return to normalcy, which would have been maybe 10%, 12% total return if you add in divvies. And in fact, we outpaced that again this year. So at some point, there's got to be a reversion to the mean, and that may mean we have 1 year of, you know, weakness to bring it back down.
Well, we end up.
Is that going to be 2026 or not? I don't know.
Just
doesn't sound like it.
Just somewhere, and I know this is like never going to happen. We Americans that still have our dollar in our pocket somewhere have to look at the value of the thing in our pocket versus when you talk about inflation, you talk about markets going up. Maybe it's the value of the dollar going down, not against another currency because they're doing the same thing, but we don't think that way. It's not look at the price of a Ford, how much it's gone up. Well, that could be one thing. Maybe the Ford stayed steady and the dollar's gone down. And we don't think that way. And if we continue to push, you know, 7-9% money supply growth, the market's always going to go up a little more than that. And other stuff is going to about it. If they were to drop the money supply growth to zero, the market would not be up next year. When is no? I mean, that's one's driving the other.
That's right. And so the market would correct, right? It would have to correct,
right?
If they don't keep pumping it with new money, the market would have to correct. But, you know, naturally, the question is, if they stop that, what would the market correct?
That's a problem,
right?
Because people are very comfortable. Yeah, people are very comfortable.
That's a problem.
Well,
certainly for the ones in control, right? I mean, it's a problem for everybody because, you know, a majority of the country is invested in 401ks and all that stuff. So whether or not, you know, you're directly invested, like you're actively trading, or whether or not you're invested through your 401k, it's going to affect you too. And so that's a problem.
Oh, yeah. I mean, if we were sober judges here, we would be very unpopular. I see no reason right now because I don't want to. Well, actually, at PTI, we don't care because we don't have people to do this. There's no way that at this level of the market, the Fed should not increase initial margin to 55 or 60%.
Yeah.
Or maintenance up to 35 or something.
Yeah. But if they do that, I agree with you. If they do that, though, that will send a negative message, right?
Well,
which is okay.
Which is,
it should send a negative message.
Well, look at the prices of these stocks. There needs to be something.
100%. I agree with you. You're not getting an argument for it. You and I are on the same page on that.
Yeah, I don't. By the way, I don't never heard of this company. If you got 2 seconds here, never heard of this company that IBM's buying. What does that do for them?
Well, I don't know. I didn't see the headline.
Who's Confluent? Evidently, they're big in the AI.
No idea. I'll have to look it up, though, because I do own IBM, and I love IBM, and they're big in, you know, IBM's got a nice quantum business. It's curious. I wonder if this has got anything to do with...
These guys have...
Look it up.
They put out a current data or something.
Yeah.
So somehow it matches in, but they paid a 29% premium. That's a lot.
Yeah, $11 billion, right?
Yeah, and evidently was trading at 7 or 8.
Yeah, 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 yeah. That's interesting. This dude's just... I didn't see it, so you now just said it.
I got to believe their chairman is a happy man today.
I'm sure he probably is.
I'm sure the workers, the workers maybe not, but that's what we do these days.
What was it? CFLT. So it closed last night at what price? Let me see. It closed at 29. It closed at 29. It's in the pre-market, it still looks like it's quoted at 29.
Well, it says here it skyrockets 29% as IBM announces $11 billion acquisition.
Let me go to CNBC and see if they have it. Maybe it's different than what I'm seeing on Bloomberg, but...
Well, this is the headlines from a while ago, so maybe it went up. I can't believe it came back down. They're going to pay cash for it.
Yeah, hold on.
It's a total cash deal. So
At 8:02, it shows it closed last night at 29.87, and at 8:04 this morning, it was trading 29.86. Now, whether or not it did sell, it's only trading on 37,000 shares, so it's not trading on a lot.
Yeah, something's weird. But they intended to pay a 29% premium. That's according to the headline. Whether their math was off or something remains to be seen. I can't believe they screwed that one up that bad, though, Kenny. Can you? I want my 29% if I'm one of these shareholders.
Yeah. Oh, my God.
Although I do have a couple of clients that are in this stock. They have a big takeover for in the advertising industry. And, boy, talk about a take under. It was like the two of the top five companies in the advertising world, international, and supposed to be 100 hours worth, and now it's 75. So it's not all these things work out that way.
No, that's right. Not all of them do. But I got to read up on this story now because, A, I'm an owner of IBM, and I like it a lot. I've owned it for a while. I got to see what this company does and how it's going to benefit
them. We'll kick it around next week because it'll be whatever happens will be done by then.
We'll be done by then, yeah, for sure.
Hey, you sound great. You feeling good?
I feel good. Knock on wood, I feel good.
Good for you, buddy.
Thank you. I'll talk to you later.
All right. Real quick, SP Futures up 2, NASDAQ Futures down 7, so nothing much going on. We're back to Hal. How are you, bud?
Oh, doing well. I love listening to you guys talk. It's fun.
Well, my Notre Dame guys are never going to talk to me again because I sort of walked through this thing.
I mean, I see your point. They do, schedule maybe 3 tough opponents a year, and they schedule, who they expect to be at the bottom half of conference, Stanford.
They played Stanford for 50 years. So that's,
I know, but
when they scheduled Boise State a few years ago, Boise State was the up-and-coming team, and they were in the top 10 every year. So you can't blame them for that. I mean, Southern Cal's normally, in the top 10. They weren't this year, even though they were pretty good.
I think Southern Cal wants out of the deal with Notre Dame because if you think about, what USC has to go through, they have to go through, a 9-game conference schedule?
Yeah.
And by having Notre Dame on their schedule, they basically have 10 conference games a year. That's tough.
There's in this world, there's no reason to play an out-of-conference good team.
Just think about what USC does, though. I mean, every year they basically play 10 conference games.
Well, yeah.
I don't think any other program does that.
Well,
because Notre Dame is in USC's conference by playing them every year for the last,
50, years?
60 years?
Oh, it's been longer than that. 1920s, I think.
Back to the 30s?
Back to when they had to go by train. That's why they
I understand why Notre Dame wants to play Stanford and USC every year because Stanford is in Northern California, great football market for recruits. And then USC is warm weather and in Southern California, another great market for recruits. So I understand why they want to play the two, but for USC, it's not a win-win because that means their schedule is a 10-team. They have to play 10 teams in conference every year. And Notre Dame's, basically playing, with Stanford and USC, they basically got a two-game conference schedule.
Well, no, they have to play 5 in the ACC.
Yeah, but those games are more like, They're rotating through probably the teams in the ACC. It's not like a conference.
Well, I mean, the ACC, at one point, when Clemson was the cat's ass, was a serious conference. Yeah. Now, all of a sudden, Clemson has dropped back.
But they weren't playing Clemson every year.
It's like every other year.
They're rotating through the schedule.
I'd say every other year. Because they play 5, there's 10, right, or something?
Yeah.
So, I mean, but the thing of it is, you only play a certain amount of football games because people get beat up in them. It's a whole different program.
I think what they had to do is go to a 10 game schedule, and then
they're never going to do that. They're never going to do that.
And then go 16 team playoff.
But what are you gaining with the playoffs? I mean, 12 is plenty if you had the top 12 teams, but they don't.
Yeah, but I think every team should be playing every week. I don't think you should get a week off. I don't believe in that at all.
What do you mean?
I don't believe in the bye.
What do you mean a bye?
I don't agree with the bye. I think you have to play. In the NFL, they get bye. You know, that team gets the bye.
You can't,
but I
you
think
can't,
everybody has to play the first round.
You can't. What I'm saying is the way this is working out. You're having some teams. We're not even. That's my whole point in this. I actually care about people getting killed. I mean, other people don't seem to give a rat's ass. I mean, you can't. You could have UCLA with Bill Walton play. Slippery Rock in basketball. Who cares? They win by 50 points.
Yeah,
it's not the same as having a football team with a $50 million payroll play a team with a $1 million payroll, hoping for the upset. It's not going to happen.
Yeah.
I mean, one team, the guys are 320, the other team, they're 220. I mean, people are going to get hurt. It's like playing a high school team.
Yeah, but to me, Tom, I like JMU and Tulane in it because how does an entrepreneur break into a market? How does an entrepreneur break into a market if the rules are skewed?
There's an allure to it. I get it. Yeah. I just think football is different because you can hurt people. I mean, you don't have the crummiest boxer in the country go against Mike Tyson just because you want to give the guy a chance.
JMU is not the worst boxer.
Their payroll is nothing compared.
Well, their payroll is nothing. But
would you step out on a limb? You're a smart man. You think any starter in JMU starts for Oregon?
You know what? The coach from JMU went to Indiana, and he brought his players with him, and they did pretty well at Indiana.
Okay, so you're saying two or three?
Yeah.
Okay, well.
I'm just saying he brought a lot of players from JMU, and there's something about playing at JMU where the team seems pretty good. And the only way JMU can break into the big boys if it gets an opportunity to knock one off. That's all I'm saying. If you're pro-competition, you got to allow the little guy to take on the big
guy.
But
the difference
David
is...
took down Goliath, Tom.
This,
David
I know.
Took down Goliath. That'd be a great story if the two Davids took down the Goliaths. That'd be awesome.
Well, my point is, it's not going to happen.
It could.
You know what ends up happening? For the first quarter, they hang
Tom,
in there.
Tom, how many times has an expert on the pregame show said, oh, this team is outmatched, outclassed, they're going to blow them out? And then what ends up happening? They play the game, and the team that everybody picked ends up losing. That happens in basketball.
I was always if I got into a softball tournament, even though our team wasn't the best, I always thought there was a chance. If everybody hit one game and they hit the ball at us, we could knock off the best team. But
it's like Dumb and Dumber.
Okay, but
what's the chances of a guy like me getting...
Here's my whole point, and you're not going to talk me off this.
It's one in a billion.
Right,
what is the same response?
You're not going to talk me off this. I suppose I could walk into the ring and take a wild swing and connect Mike Tyson's with his nose while he's staring at some girl in the crowd, and I could drop him. But the fact is, he's going to kill me.
Took out Mike Tyson. Nobody thought that was going to happen.
You're willing to sacrifice somebody else's kid against somebody way better than him. I'm not.
No, these are adult men. They're adult men, and
they're idiots.
Don't have to participate.
No such thing as
they
a,
want to.
Okay.
They want to look at that. There are guy that got killed. Tom, look at the guy that got killed in Iraq or Afghanistan, the former NFL football player, the safety from the Arizona Cardinals who played at Arizona State.
Yeah.
Do you know how big he was in high school? He was like 5'7", 170 pounds. Through sheer hard work and determination, he turned himself into an All-American or a first-team all Pac-12, a Pac-10 linebacker, and then he became like an... and there was two guys from Arizona in that situation. One went to the Rams, one went to Arizona. Nobody recruited these guys because they were 5'7", 170 pounds out of high school.
One of the bars that you sponsor our softball team. There was a guy, this is 30 years ago, there was a guy on the south side that was a middleweight contender. And he would stop off at this bar once in a while. And inevitably, one of the bouncers wanted to take him on. That's how stupid young males are.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I was dumb too.
I mean, that's how stupid young males are. Do you have any idea?
You wouldn't last
30 seconds with this guy.
Stupidity.
Yeah, I mean, you wouldn't learn anything. All I'm saying is the way this football is going. Okay, and you know, 20 years ago, I might have been right with you on this stuff. Where right now, Alabama has no business playing Eastern Illinois.
Yeah, they don't. No,
and because I'm talking about just in injuries. I don't, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, I put James Madison almost in the same spot. They have no business playing Ohio State or whoever the hell they're playing Oregon, which is almost as bad.
Yeah.
They've decided. I mean, Illinois high school football. Mark Carmel doesn't go play a team in Southern Illinois. We're graduating 20 people.
Yeah.
What are you doing? I mean, what are you doing that for? basketball, who cares?
NCAA.
You know, basketball, who cares? You know, but in football,
well, basketball, you have, you know, 12-man rosters, right?
But so you also
kind of get spread out more.
But you don't get to flatten the guy every play.
Yeah,
like you do in football.
Well, I'll tell you what, Tom, I played football and basketball, and the only time I ever got hurt was in basketball. Basketball's a full contact sport. You don't have any pads, and that elbow hits you in the freaking face. That hurts.
I get it, but I mean, it's. Yeah. I mean, you don't have to line up 30 times a game against a guy that looks like King Kong across the line.
Well, everybody loves the Rudy story, man.
Yeah, I know. You know, part about that, Rudy didn't play. He got in on one play, didn't he? That's what he did. Nobody would have liked the Rudy story if they actually put him in the game against Purdue or something.
All I'm saying is the only way at George Mason University,
Madison, Madison,
James Madison University. Yeah, I'm thinking of basketball. The only way JMU becomes a big boy is by getting an opportunity, and if they ball out, and it's just one game, then all of a sudden it sets itself up for future success.
All I'm saying is.
And the big boys don't want that. They want these little schools locked out.
I didn't design it this way. I'm saying you're reaching the point where you're going to end up with 40 essentially professional teams,
yeah,
paid like that, probably not going to school, being recruited, being straight, you know, strength
it's
training.
It's better to stay in college than it is to go to the NFL.
I don't disagree with that. But my point is those teams have set themselves up different. They've got no more business playing Illinois Wesleyan than you and I have boxing Muhammad Ali. You know,
but they're adults. Their coaches are adults.
Oh, wait a minute, coaches are adults. Coaches will throw anybody under the bus.
Legally, they're adults.
Yeah,
right? And they can make these decisions on their own. We don't need to make a decision.
I tell you what, if it was my kid, no friggin' way is he going to Oregon and lining up against a D tackle on Oregon. No way.
That's a big monster.
Yeah, I mean, it's not happening. Basketball, go ahead, lose by 40. What's the difference? Or softball, just don't get hit in the head if a guy hits it too hard.
Oh man, as a referee in high school sports, I've seen some injuries that wouldn't happen in basketball happened in basketball. For example, the 6'1" kid from one of the Indian Nation teams in Idaho. I was refereeing the game. He was 6'1", and I've never seen anybody get off the floor like him. I mean, his head was at the rim. The very first play was an alley-oop pass. His head was at the rim, and he missed the dunk because the pass was so bad. But they were blowing out this team from Pomeroy, Washington, by 50 points. The coach, Josh, I know him because I played ball against him. The coach puts him in, 50-point blowout. The guy's going up to dunk it. His head's up at the rim on a fast break. And a player standing just in the center of the key, not in the key, but at the bottom of the circle, standing right about there. Kid goes over the top of him. His thigh is at the kid's ear.
Oh, yeah.
And he hits the floor, and he's out, and they don't have – there's no way they're going to win the state championship that year. And I'm like, Josh, what are you doing, man? Why'd you have him in the game? And he goes, he wanted to play. And I'm like, oh, man, you just ruined your season. He goes, yeah, I know.
Well.
So that kind of thing happens in basketball.
All right, hey, we've been extolling the virtues of you by digging up the stuff on the banks.
Yeah.
How about continuing with that a little bit? This is as an aside.
Well, the article I wrote, it's about 1,500 words. It comes out Friday, and I'll share it with you guys when it publishes.
What I was talking about with Kenny regarding interest rates going up and down, what I think the biggest Achilles heel in this whole mess, and it probably ties in with what you're doing.
Yeah.
How could we have rates go from 4, 5, or 6, wherever they were, down to essentially zero and have credit cards and other stuff either be unchanged or up. What is wrong with the system to where we, if these guys cut rates tomorrow by a quarter point, which everybody thinks they're going to, you're going to have...
I actually think it could be as high as 50 basis points.
Okay, okay. But either way, you're going to have 15 swinging idiots or ladies or whatever. They're going to be all over every news thing saying this is terrific for everybody because credit card rates are going to go down and mortgage rates are going to go down. And,
or credit card rates are heading down.
It's simply untrue. Now, my question is, one, why are they so stupid to say it? But we can't deal with that. Question is, why don't they come down? Where has the connection been lost?
I think if you look at the way that banks raise capital, they have to have profits. If their profits are high, that is counted toward their capital.
You do realize when you say that, if the banks are making these decisions on their own. Yeah. You're not talking about competition. You're talking about some kind of cartel. Is that the problem?
Oh, it's a cartel. Okay. The Federal Reserve is right.
Is that the problem?
Well, yeah. I mean, what does a cartel do? It eliminates these strategic decisions between the members of the cartel. If there wasn't a cartel, I think credit card rates would be a lot lower. We have a banking cartel. It is anti-competitive. It's more in line with a socialist central planning economy or mercantilist economy than a free market economy. It is not a free market institution to have a central bank.
How much do you think? Counter. This, I don't know. You're the professor. How much you think of it is, we just talked about young men wanting to take on a boxer and wanting to go play against the O-line of Oregon. How much of it is, I won't say stupidity, but lack of... maybe lack of foresight or whatever. And I put myself in the same category, by the way.
Yeah.
I have several credit cards, and I pay them off every month. So I really don't check to see that much what my rate is going to be. I know it's horrible. I mean, I have a good credit rating, so it's probably 18% instead of 25%, but it's still pretty horrible. It might be 19% or whatever, depending on...
Yeah.
And I know that if I wanted to, I mean, maybe everybody doesn't know this, there's a couple of credit unions and stuff that I could join. Matter of fact, I think I'm in one, and I don't even use their credit card. I think their rates for me is 7.9 or something. I never use it because I want my 2 cents back every time, whatever. I think if people, how much of it is people being led down the road that they never think they're going to have a balance, and all of a sudden one day they have a medical thing or a car payment or a car repair that they never dreamed of, or a roof or something. It goes on the credit card, and all of a sudden you're paying 20-some percent, and now maybe the person who has 8% doesn't like you. I mean, how much of it is individual stupidity? Just like the guy wanting to fight the professional boxer. I mean...
Well, I don't think it's stupidity at all. I think what it is government policy creates all kinds of moral hazards. People talk about, why don't people save? Well, why do you need to save if the government's going to bail you out of every rainy day?
Wait a minute, people don't save because they don't need money.
Yeah, you don't need to save because if you lose your job, you got unemployment benefits. You don't need to save because when you hit 65, you got Social Security. I mean, that right there makes a difference. So the government creates all kinds of moral hazards.
I think you don't save because you can't.
Think about this, too. This came up in my macro class this semester. Why is the savings rate so freaking low? Because the interest rate is really, really low. Now, why would they want the interest rate so low on a savings account? Well, because a savings account is a callable loan. At any moment in time, you can walk into the bank, pull your money out. So checking accounts... Now, people hold money in checking accounts for convenience to pay their bills. But why is savings account balances so low?
Well,
because they're callable loans. And the interest rate is maybe 1%, maybe even less.
Well, for 8 years now, maybe pushing 10, we've had 1% rates on savings, and inflation's been 5. It's been the biggest dog on earth.
Yeah. So nobody's going to hold money in their savings account. So what has the government done? The government and the regulators have done something really kind of interesting here that I don't think very many people realize the consequences of it. They know savings accounts are callable loans to banks. And so what do? They create these other kinds of accounts, savings accounts, where they've eliminated the call part. You can't call your money at any point. They're no longer callable
savings accounts. You mean they're called like 401ks, retirement accounts. You can't pull your money out unless you want to pay a huge penalty. They're not liquid like a savings account is. A savings account
One's really before liquid. Tax, after tax. It gets you to the same place.
Yeah. Well, but you also have the early withdrawal fee, you know, penalty, right? There's a penalty involved with taking money out of a savings account called a 401k. There's a penalty. And the tax implication, right?
Well,
so now all that money's locked away in a 401k, and what are the people running that fund do? They buy and sell, probably buy and sell as much as they can so they can get the commissions off every buy and sell. They're probably buying and selling more than they would
People run the fund don't get the commissions.
Okay, all right, but I've always thought that when you buy and sell within one of these funds, you don't have to pay the capital gains tax.
Right.
Yeah. So well, it's probably more of that.
Actually,
going
when
on.
Actually when you get rid of it, when you roll in an IRA or something like a PTI, when you pull money out, that's ordinary income. You don't get the capital gains treatment.
Yeah. But all I'm saying is they've recognized this issue that savings accounts are functionally a callable loan, right? Where the lender can pull those funds at any point in time.
Well, I
and so they have to fix that with these restrictive savings accounts.
As you dig through this, you're already ready to publish it. Now I'm asking you to add a chapter. One thing that I absolutely have zero idea is how in the hell it happened. If you're as old as me and you remember the inflation in the 70s and 80s.
Yeah. I remember it because my mom was divorced and she was working three jobs to, you know, try to put food on the table. So I remember it.
Well, okay, that was a problem, obviously, to everybody. Mm-hmm. But the one issue that was never a problem for regular people, which my parents were, if the inflation rate was 12%, you got 14% at the bank.
Yeah.
At the savings and loan. You always got the inflate. And when you think about it, one of the simplest formulas in all of economics that nobody even knows now, much less pays attention to, is your interest rate that you pay, your nominal rate, should be equal to the real rate of interest, is what you're paying somebody to actually use their money, because it is an asset. You're trying to, it's a factor of production. You're not a building. You need concrete, you need steel, you need money, right? It's the same thing. So it's the real rate of interest, what somebody actually charges you for their money over the course of a year, plus any inflation you think is coming by, because if inflation's 10%, you got to give the guy the 10%, because when you're giving him the money back, it's worth 10% less, right?
Yeah.
So if your interest rate is 13%, it's say 3% real and 10% inflation. Well, during the 70s and 80s, the regular person got that.
Yep.
And now this time, somehow and somewhere, it's got to be buried in what you're doing, Hal, either in the regs or in the cartel-ness or whatever you want to do. Anybody who had $1 million in, where are we, 2026 soon, and put it in the bank in 2020 on January 1st, and now today is pulling the money out. He's going to get $1 million plus his 1.5% interest for 5 years. I'm going to say he's pulling out really $600,000 in terms of value. He's got decimated with that cash in the bank.
Yeah.
And that did not happen in the 70s and 80s. Now, my question always has been, how did it happen this time? What's the confluence of events? Is it a carteldom? Is it the Fed?
It's a lot of things. The Fed is a cartel, and these banks
work together. But the Fed was there in the 70s, and it didn't happen.
Well, yeah, but, you know, over time you learn things, and I think it's like I tell my kids, look, you don't want to start lying when you're 11 years old. Just own up to it, because if you tell a innocent lie today, tomorrow it won't be so innocent. And then you get used to lying. And then by the time you're an adult, all you're doing is lying. So I think what happens over time is that as younger people replace the previous generations, within males in the Navy, for example, if I told an outrageous story, I called it an X story. My buddy's going to one-up me with an X plus one story. And then, so every story is getting more and more outrageous through time, as we're sitting around the charging station pumps, for the nuclear reactor on our ship. We're sitting around and telling these stories. It's X plus one.
I can't even imagine.
X squared. In the Navy, it's X squared, right? So the hyperbole gets increased. It grows geometrically, right?
I had 48 hookers in it, but it stopped.
But I think that happens the same way over time within these cartels. As you chip away at ethics, right, of morality, societal morals, as you chip away at that, each generation one-ups the previous generation. So I think with the Federal Reserve is you got a banking cartel where these banks, these big banks, work together. They're colluding. That's what the Federal Reserve allows. And under today's rules, one way to raise bank capital to meet your capital requirements is to have extremely high retained earnings. And one way to do that is if interest rates drop, keep your credit card rates high, so you have this huge net interest margin, right? That's one way to boost your retained earnings.
When I was doing this little bit of research, maybe you stumbled onto the same site. If you look at it, there is a site where you dig on historical credit card rates.
Yeah.
One of them actually has a bar chart or bar graph, whatever you want to call it, where it'll have the credit card number, and it'll also have the difference between what prime rate and credit card.
Yeah.
And not only has the credit card rate gone up, the spread between, you know, like a regular rate and the credit card rate, or certainly the savings rate and the credit card rate, is also at record high.
Yeah.
Which is really that's like the little man tax, right?
Yeah.
Hey, we got to go to break here real quick. We won't be too long because there's not much going on. S&P futures up 1, NASDAQ futures down 13. Of course, we got the Fed thing tomorrow, so today should be a nothing. We'll see if it is. Be right back, Stocks and Jacks.
This is a true sad story for ADT, the leader in home security systems. My favorite dog, Oliver, was stolen from our garage recently. If I had a camera system installed in my home from ADT, I would have known exactly what car possibly pulled up in my driveway and stole my little friend. If I had a security system from ADT, my dog would still be here. I called ADT this weekend, and they're coming out in a few days to install a camera and a new security system. Unfortunately, it's a little too late for me. Listen, protect everyone you love in your family. Call ADT now. Have them come out and give you a quote to install a full security system in your home. Don't let it be too late for you. Call right now.
Paid for by the Home Security Hotline. 800-200-6543. 800-200-6543. 800-200-6543. That's 800-200-6543.
Stocks, Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Hello, North Bank Stocks and Jocks. I'm talking about Ricky on the board. SP Futures down a buck. NASDAQ Futures down 27. We were up a little bit a while ago. You have a question for Hal after. It says here, Trump says NVIDIA can sell H200 AI chips to China if U.S. gets 25%. I just want Al to mull when he expects to get his first check out of that. I don't know when mine will be. Just kind of curious. I don't know if anybody thinks they're going to get that. DAX up 82.3%. FTSE down 2. Call that flat. Kick around down 44.5%. So kind of a mixed bag over there. get a load of this. Ray-Ban maker Essilor Luxottica falls 4.8% after Google plans AI glasses launch. Hal, maybe you can tell me after the break how AI is going to make sunglasses, but there's got to be some way, I suppose. Asia, Nikkei up 73, call that 0.1%. Hang Seng down 331, that's 1.3%. That's a big move. And Shanghai down 14.4%. So China going the other direction from the Nikkei, which seems to do almost every day now. Bonds unchanged, 4.17. The bond down 1 basis point, 2.85. This is, again, ahead of the rate decision tomorrow. Oil down 4 cents, 58.84. This thing is bogged down here between 57 and 60. Never seen it this steady for this long at this price, but it's there. Gold up 16 bucks, 42.34, getting near highs again. Silver up 99 cents, 59.40. We have a silver position, so that's good for the good guys. We actually have a gold position, too. FX dollar's pretty much steady at 116 and 133 in the pound, so not much going on there. Crypto, which was down yesterday, it's only up a little bit today. Back to 90,000, 90,689. It made it up to 92, but it's backed off of that, but it's still way above the 80 it was a couple weeks ago. And way down from the 126 it was a few months ago. So it's been all over the place. Ricky, what do you got for us? Traffic, weather, sports.
Morning, Chief. It's currently 7:35 a.m. here in Chicago. 27 degrees right now with a high of 37. Rather cloudy and breezy today. And tonight we have overcast and windy with a couple of showers and a low of 33 degrees. Phoenix, Arizona, 48 degrees right now with a high of 75. Sunny and very nice weather today. Tonight will be clear with a low of 46. Traffic in Chicago, we're looking at 32 minutes. Kennedy from Monroe's. Edens from Lake Cook, 49 minutes. Eisenhower from Wolf, 41 minutes. Dan Ryan from 95th, 34 minutes. And lastly, inbound Stevenson from 294, 45 minutes. Let's talk sports real quick. The Bears bumped down to second place in NFC North after Sunday's loss against the now division leaders, the Packers. This Sunday, they host Cleveland Browns at 12 p.m. Cardinals coming out of a loss this weekend as well. We'll be playing Texans in Houston at the same time. In the meantime, this Thursday, December 11th, Falcons at Buccaneers at 7:15 p.m. Lastly, NBA. The Suns beat Timberwolves yesterday 108-105. They've now won 6 of the last 10 and sit at number 7 of Western Conference. Today we also have Miami Heat at Orlando Magic 5 p.m. and Knicks at Raptors 7:30 p.m. That's all I got for you, Chief. Back to you guys.
So, Hal, you planning on getting your check from the government as we on these NVIDIA chips?
Well, I don't know. I mean, I don't like to see the government playing in business because the government is also the umpire. It'd be like the Bears. Oh, by the way, the Bears. I love the Bears. They look pretty good. It's like the Bears having hiring the umpires for all NFL games. So I don't appreciate government being in business at all. So I wish they'd stay out of it.
Well, do you think it's government or just a few guys? I think of this group, it might just be a few guys.
Yeah, but this whole thing with government and business, you know, there's just a long history of the federal government doing things it shouldn't be doing.
Oh, yeah, I agree.
You know, so there's all kinds of government agencies that we shouldn't have that are doing things that would be better done in the private sector. So it's just how things have evolved through the founding of the nation, where government does more and more things it shouldn't be doing. And there's a lot of, I mean, like, for example, look at every freaking 6 months, it seems like we have to shut down the government. TSA is not getting paid. Air traffic controllers aren't getting paid because they're government employees. Canada has a privatized airport security system. They have privatized air traffic controllers. There's no reason why these guys should be federal employees. There's just no reason for it. I think they use it as a way to tighten the noose on the American taxpayer so they can keep taking from us. And I consider my labor my property. My labor comes from my body. It's my property. And income taxes, in my opinion, are government theft. And there's no reason for these groups of people to be federal employees. We should privatize it so we never have to worry about
it. Well, even if you privatize, you still got to pay them.
Yeah.
You still got to pay them.
Well, but the airports can pay them. The airports have outsourced this labor to us. We had, as a taxpayer, had to pay these checks. The airlines should be paid.
They are. They're paying. They pay a boatload of fees.
I'm just saying that there's no reason for these employees to be federal employees. Well, they need to be taken off the balance sheet.
But you end up having the question is, by the way, you sound like you're,
I'm opposed to Trump's deals, like with NVIDIA,
but you're talking like your father, Uncle Milt, yeah, or your uncle.
There's no reason for these TSA employees and air traffic controllers to be employees.
Okay, but
I'm as opposed to that as I am with what Trump's doing with these companies.
Okay, but it almost doesn't matter. You know, I mean, it depends on if you're crooked, you're sort of crooked. And
yeah,
Milton Friedman would go through this constantly in class. He would say, okay, you have your, say, the Illinois Tollway, which is the example he used to use. Those guys were all you know, it was supposed to be no tolls after 10 years, right? But, of course, that hasn't happened.
Oh, yeah. Once a program rolls out, it never stops.
Well, then they say, well, we had a two-lane road. Well, now we did a three-lane road, which is probably true. Well, now we did a four-lane road, so it never ends. But yeah. He would say, okay, the guys now, you know, they never put the guys back in the booths after COVID for taking cash.
Well, I never thought guys should be in the booths to begin with.
There should be
ways to process payments on the toll roads.
Okay.
You could have an easy pass, and you could have it compete against Visa.
How about we just be able to pay cash like you ought to be able to pay cash?
Well, yeah, I mean, that's true, but, you know, it creates bottlenecks. I mean,
when
you're going into New York City, you have to stop and pay a dude,
I'm not against,
it created all kinds of bottlenecks.
I'm not against all advancement.
Yeah.
But what I'm saying is he would say, okay, what you ought to do is just like you supposedly do for a road project, you could have all these people working for the state, and every time you want to fix a bridge, you send the state employees out to fix the bridge. And he goes, but that's not really what you'd want. You'd rather think the private enterprise is going to be better, like you think. You guys are like inseparable, it seems, sometimes. But the problem is, if all of a sudden you have two or three people rigging the bid, you're right back where you started from. Now the question is, how do you get a clean auction where everybody gets in, everybody has perfect information? You have the same issue there as you do with corrupt people working for the state. It never ends.
I think the people running those auctions are the state. Is the state?
Okay, but my point is, if it's not clean at any level, the process, it's like, you know, if ever I want to have a serious debate, I think probably with you or my brother, all I have to do is hop in a car and drive to Seattle and talk about our tax system. And Dr. J was the same way. I could never win this argument with any of you guys, except I know I'm right. Okay, on this one. I mean, he says, well, we should do a value-added tax. We should listen to that. This whole system we have now has become corrupt.
Okay,
and my point is, it's corrupt for a reason, because people have tried to get around it so many ways from sideways that the thing continues to have to try and deflect every way to get around it. And if you go to value-added tax, it sounds simple. Just like an income tax sounds simple. You have a certain amount of income, you got a certain amount of expenses, send us a check for 25%. This is not that difficult. Yet, what does the thing look like? Oh, wait a minute, what's really an expense? What's really the value-added tax? The same people that found a way to get crooked crap into the current thing will find a way to get it in that thing. They just got to start over. It has nothing to do with the system. It has to do with the people who get around it.
Yeah.
In my opinion, I'm not being dogmatic here. I'm just saying, the reason why you don't go out.
Well, I think the idea that I read about from a Wisconsin economist, it's not my idea. I thought it was a great idea because it would treat every transaction equally under the law. I think it's gaining traction on Twitter, where in our digital world where we buy and sell stuff electronically, you could easily set up a system where you get rid of all taxes at the federal level. And every transaction, there's a small percentage taken, like 0.5% on every transaction. It doesn't matter what kind of transaction it is. If there's a transaction, 0.5%. Just take it off the top.
I'm going to be the first guy there who says, wait a minute, this transaction is for the good of the society. You shouldn't really take 5% out of this one.
Not 5%. We're talking about a half of
whatever the number is. It doesn't matter if the tax rate is 5%. Somebody's going to say, I shouldn't be paying the 5%. It's just the way people are.
Yeah.
I
think if it's at 0.5%, I don't think anybody's going to care.
Believe me, somebody will care.
I think it's preferred to our current system. And if they do a consumption tax, a sales tax of say 20%, there's going to be all kinds of black markets popping up everywhere as people try to take goods off the shelf and sell them out the back door.
You know, if you had to back up on all the people who went overseas and paid 10% taxes, that'll be nice. Say 10% taxes versus the 25% the rest of the corporations were paying. I mean, you would say, it's only 15%. What's the difference? over a period of 10 years, now some other company, maybe the chairman wants out, he wants his chunk, he doesn't want to run the company anymore, would you see a lot of that? I tell you what, I'm going to bid $2 billion for your place. Okay, how the hell can I, paying the 25%, outbid the guy who's only paid 10% or 15% for 10 years? I can't do it. It ends up being worse. It starts to compound itself, and you're the mathematician. It's not just the 1 year.
I know.
Yeah. I mean, how many companies...
I just think simple, clean. It's like the NFL catch rule.
It can't be that way.
Ball and 2 feet, catch. No questions. Who cares what happens afterwards? You got ball and 2 feet,
I'm just telling you. By the way, why am I arguing with somebody where I hope he's right? I hope you're right, but you're not. It's just not the way people are, right? There's always a reason why.
I just think something clean, something simple.
It doesn't work that way.
Yeah.
I guarantee you, if all of a sudden, say for instance, Stocks and Jacks made money, duh. what if somebody says, "We love you. I want a commercial, twice an hour," which I would do for it in a second. Here's like $1 million on the year. I'd go, I have no idea why I want to do that, but give me the check. I mean, you must know more than I do about our listeners. Anyway, but if I did that, I could be the dumbass who just says, wow, it's a we got $1 million. It cost me, even giving Ricky and everybody else a raise, all right, it cost me $40,000 to run Stocks and Jacks, or $100,000. I could take the $900,000 income and I could say, I'll just write the check for 25% of this and be happy as a clam, right? Which I should be. But no. It's not the way people operate. I'm going to sit there and go, you know, it's Ricky, he's a nice kid, but boy, you know what? What if I paid him a bunch of dough and sent him down to the Bahamas or some damn place? Or where's the spot in Dublin or somewhere he can go? And what I'm going to do...
Or Zug, Switzerland.
Or whatever. Well, no, I don't think they have the tax rate. Somewhere where the tax rates are a lot less. So yeah. What I'm going to do is I'm going to take the Stocks and Jacks actually does have a trademark, so which is of value. This would be of more value if somebody paid me $1 million. But I'm gonna hire Ricky, send him over there, and of course we're gonna pay him nothing. Well, we'll pay him a little more than he's making now, but we'll pay him nothing.
Well, if you paid me to go to the Bahamas, I would go there for $10 a year.
Well, that's what I'm saying. But now every week, Ricky's gonna send me a schedule of who I'm gonna have on the air, which we all know the schedule anyway. But so what? He's gonna plot out the schedule for me. He's gonna be my consultant. And oh, by the way, We're gonna set our trademark over in that little Stocks and Jacks Britain. We're gonna set the trademark over there, and we're gonna pay $600,000 a year to rent the trademark.
Yeah.
All right. So now, guess what? 80% of the taxes are now in a place where it's 5%.
Yeah. Well, that's happening right now.
Okay, but what happened to Hal and Dr. J and my brother? What happened to your simple tax code? I just blew it up.
Yeah, but that's happening now.
Okay, but now somebody has to say, you can't do that, and that becomes another 3 pages. Then somebody else figures out some other little angle. That's another 3 pages. I'm saying the simple doesn't work. Yeah. It doesn't work because I just got around it in a second. I'm just a dummy.
Tom, you just identified the real reason for border walls and passports. They're used to trap the population in a tyrannical society. The rich can get out, but everybody else is
By the way, Ricky's already got his plane ticket.
You know, every time you say Ricky, I think of that movie with John Cusack called Better Off Dead, where the neighbor boy, his name is Ricky. Ricky, oh, has that Meyer boy been bothering you?
But I mean, there's reasons for this stuff, and you constantly have to run it down, and you have to have an IRS group that's ready to, because you can't let the person over there, the drug...
The thing is, Tom, that's happening right now, too.
Sure it does. Oh, without a doubt. The drug companies overseas are the ones that buy the drug companies here. Because guess what? Yeah. It's all money they didn't pay in taxes.
Yeah.
Duh. But you're not going to get the administration to go after that, are you? Those people are stuffing the guy's pocket, or the guy before him, or the guy before him.
Well, you look at the senators. Man, those pharma companies really make sure those guys get reelected.
I think they probably are the...
That's why these senators are so outraged at any change to the current system because, man, they're making bank.
You know who's
in
who,
the form
you know
of
be outraged?
Contributions.
What do you think? Jeff Burrow lost the other day, but I think he's a great. What if all of a sudden these guys couldn't advertise on TV? The drug companies with patents, and all they're trying to do is giving people, you know, go in and tell your doctor and tell the insurance company to pay $2,000 for this, you know, prescription. That to me is whatever. What do you think Jeff Burrow's cut in pay would be if drug companies weren't on the NFL?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, it'd probably be pretty substantial.
I think it would too.
Yeah, I remember the early 80s watching a NFL football game. Man, they had beer commercials. Every commercial was a beer commercial or a cigarette commercial.
But those guys are competitive. He's got a drunk. If you can get somebody. Oh, yeah. What do you think these drugs cost? This is bizarre, Hal. One day someone it probably was you got me on this kind of subject. You or Carl, you guys. I dug into this website. You know, Carl could probably find all this stuff. There's a website. What are the leading drugs that? How much do they charge? How much do they spend on TV advertising? Or and I got this list. You know what's weird? The top 10. I didn't know what 8 of them were. They're all for some kind of skin diseases or something.
Hmm.
But I went to go back in it 2 days later. They said you've used up your time in here.
Hmm.
They wouldn't let me. I should have taken a screenshot if I knew how to do that the first time.
Yeah.
But it's millions and millions of dollars. You know the one that always was a big. Fortunately, they've been able to fill in. Remember all the Viagra and Cialis ads?
Oh yeah. Yeah.
Well, they both went off patent. Was it what 3 years ago? I think they were $40 million in the NFL. They had to be 20 or 30 to CNBC. They were like every other one. You know their clientele, and all of a sudden they're gone. As soon as they went off patent, they were gone.
Well, I mean that's a good place to market those kind of drugs because the NFL football. You know, some of the NFL football fans like to eat wings. They drink some beer. You know,
and they like other stuff. They like to be able to perform.
Yeah, I guess they may not be able to.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's a great place to advertise. But you wanna solve the healthcare issue. You gotta get rid of the pharma cartel with the FDA. And the FDA says, "Oh, this drug's great." So the FDA is a marketing tool for these pharma companies. You gotta get rid of the patents. And people will say, well, if you get rid of the patents, the drugs won't be developed. Oh, they will be developed. You'll just get drugs that are developed in a different way. Like, do you see a pharma company with the current regulatory environment, with the current cartelizing power of the state, developing a fat drug, a fat pill, that you only have to take once? No, they're going to, under this current system, they're going to design a drug where you have to take it to lose weight. And if you go off of it, you gain the weight back and more. So you're on this drug for your lifetime. That's the current system in America, where they manufacture these drugs to work in a certain way, so you have to buy them for the rest of your life. And that's the problem. I think if we had a system where we didn't have these patents, we didn't have this cartelizing of these industries, we would have real drugs that would solve problems, because people who go to college to study this stuff have a passion for it, and they want to help people. It's just like me. I teach at a university because I have a passion for it, and I want to enlighten young people. I don't do it for the money. I do it because I enjoy it, and that would happen in drug development. So this whole thing about we need patents to have drug development is a complete, utter lie that supports the cartel.
Okay, so if by the way, again, you're preaching to the choir. Because I'm going to turn.
It's more than a one man choir.
Well, but you got a two man choir. But I'm going to say if I were to go out tomorrow, boy, imagine me in a stump speech. If I'm going to go out tomorrow and say, here's the deal, Americans, my fellow Americans, who was that? Was that Reagan? Who the hell was that? You say my fellow Americans.
I think it's from a movie.
Could be.
That's from Mr. Mom.
What was Roosevelt?
It was a tuna guy.
What did Roosevelt, his weekly radio address? He wasn't.
Yeah,
like,
yeah, but it came out in my that movie with Michael Keaton, Mr. Mom, where the president of the tuna company says, "Hello, my fellow Americans."
Oh God! Look, say, my fellow Americans, deep down in everybody's rite of passage, everybody is convinced, I say everybody, just about everybody, is convinced that it could be them coming up with a hula hoop in the garage or some process, and I deserve protection from my government if I'm first, if I register. Everybody believes that.
Yeah.
And to turn that bus around and say these things all suck, I think that would be a zero-sum game. But
well,
now,
that's the purpose of the state. The purpose of the state is to protect individuals from competition.
Well,
it's anti-competitive.
It's actually to protect intellectually property. I'm talking about the way it's perceived. There's a reason why there's patent laws.
Yeah.
Somebody gets to invent something.
Is just a government permission, right? And a protection against competition.
Okay. Professor Friedman, for a second, could you just let me say that's what people were sold and that's what people believe?
Oh, yeah, I know. But usually the way something's sold is the opposite of its actual purpose.
Right? Okay,
they always sell it in a different way.
Okay,
they always sell it in the kindest and best way.
You're talking
to
a guy who sat in a class for 6 months with Father Fitzgerald that just ripped apart.
Oh, man, I would love to go back in time and do that. I think that would be just fascinating.
He just ripped apart the whole patent thing from day one. And how any big patent went to the wrong guy. You know, I mean, he's like, you know, Alexander Bell didn't invent the telephone. Duh. You know, and the Kodak situation with Brownie Cameron. Brownie Cameron invented the Instamatic, and Kodak stole it from him. How many people know that when you go register a patent and you get one, and all of a sudden somebody goes, "Hey, Al, I think I got a patent that's better than that. That's really my patent. By the way, I did something." How many people even know that the entire defense of that is on you? But the government will, even though they gave it to you, they did the investigation and said, "Yeah, this is clean." They're not going to back you up at all.
No.
So every one of them is rife for being stolen. There's companies that have 20,000 patents they've bought up for other places, and all they do is watch every patent application. It's a whole. They dump in and say, "Oh, that one's mine," or "You got to buy this one from me." So the thing has been basically a screw up since day one.
Yeah, the way it's applied is it's just a harvesting operation.
But I'm saying, how do you combat the fact that Ricky can go in his garage, come up with something, and he gets protection, he gets to sell it, nobody gets to steal it?
The problem is Ricky's not going to get it. Somebody else is going
to
get it.
He might get it, but he won't be able to defend it. But nobody knows. They seem to think. I'm saying it's all the way things are sold.
You just got to tell the truth. Ricky is not going to get he's going to get a patent, but he's not going to benefit it from it because the bigger company with the better lawyers, they're going to steal
patent
from him.
Spoken like a true academic. It's not about telling
Ricky's
the truth.
Ricky's not getting it. Ricky's not getting his patent.
He's
not going to benefit.
It's not about telling the truth. It's getting people to believe you telling the truth. How do you think politicians become politicians?
Yeah.
Has this guy in office told the truth once since he's been there?
I don't think politicians tell the truth at all.
Oh, this guy's to a certain extreme. He's told extreme. The people love it. The people, they want to believe the BS because it sounds better. And that's why you and I are doing what we're doing, and they're in office.
Yeah, the thing about the populism behind Mondami and Trump is this Marxist rage, Marxist rage. The article, my next article is probably going to be called Das Rage. I'm playing with the title, but I got to wait until the semester's over because it's just brutal right now. But what we're experiencing in America today is Marx's rage. And I'm not a Marxist. I'm the opposite of Marxist. I'm a radical libertarian. But we're seeing Marx's rage. And you got two guys that are really good at exploiting that.
But you're okay. You just said it. You know what you just said about yourself?
I'm a radical libertarian.
Okay. You and I don't like what we perceive to be what Marx came from and what he said he wanted to do.
Oh, I appreciate I appreciate the world he grew up in.
That's exactly right. Now that you've gone back and researched it even more, which, by the way, I've loved that you have because now I've learned from you, you're saying, wait a minute, maybe we misjudged this guy a little bit.
Oh, I think we have. We've misjudged the world that he lived in and the world he was critiquing. He wasn't critiquing... You know, the free exchange economy where adults exchange products, services, and ideas, you know, voluntarily. We're not. He wasn't critiquing that world. He's critiquing the world that our world is becoming. And that's where this rage comes from. That's where the rage is. That's where the rage behind Trump comes from. That's where the rage behind Mandami comes from. And they are really good at exploiting that. Their populism plays to that Marx rage.
Even if the people realize that he screwed them worse than the last guy did.
Yeah, because they're playing to that rage about this system, the banking rules, the changes in monetary policy, the change in the banking rules, where all this money flows to these very the finance class, the banking class.
They think this guy or Biden or somebody else is going to help them, and none of them do.
No, if you think a politician is going to help you, they're used car salespeople. That's not a good deal for you.
The only way they're going to help you, you know, hell, we got a dash here. But by the way, if I bought you a beer for every time I've brought up what you found out about Marx, I find it so fascinating. I owe you a lot of beers because in conversation and other shows, I think that is absolutely fascinating. You did that. Thank you.
Yeah, no problem. Yeah. Well, it's gonna be a fascinating article, and it was the most interesting part of my history of economic theory class. I had students tell me that it was just awesome the way I presented it. In actuality, I have the narrative I start with that module is me being in the future where I look 20, but I'm 60, and I'm in a Google bot, and I have the DeLorean time machine, and I go back and pick up Marx and take him to the future that I envision, and Murray Rothbard is along for the ride. And it's just a really fascinating narrative, and they just loved it.
Well, but people get themselves so fixated by what they think they know. Yeah. I mean, if you look at the Depression here, okay, everybody just waited it out. and they were so convinced our system was the best, and they just waited it out. Hell, you just had banks steal everybody's money from everybody, for God's sake. Well, they didn't steal it.
Oh,
just disappeared.
Your mortgage... They're not gonna eliminate that, but they're gonna eliminate your checking account. They're gonna eliminate your savings account.
I don't think there were.
You still had to pay your mortgage.
I don't think there were mortgages back then.
There were loans that you still had to pay. Yeah, you had to pay the loan, but man, you got your savings account and your deposit.
I'm not wiped out. Hey, you know what? For next week, let's tee that one up. I'm not sure if you owed a loan to a bank that you went there and the whole thing was just shuttered the next day. I'm not so sure you owed anybody.
Oh, I think you still own the loan.
To who?
The person that buys the bank that
I don't think they. You know, let's do some research.
I
don't think anybody bought those places. It's not like today. Well, that's some research. Maybe I'll dig into that. Hey, by the way, the two of the things that you've come up with in the last 4 or 5 weeks are spectacular. The stuff about the banks, and the stuff about Marx. I mean, what I was saying about the 30s. People here.
What are people in Chicago saying? I'm not. I don't live there, so.
But I mean, but people
buzz.
Well, but people went to communist rallies. I won't say they were communist. They went to communist rallies. They went to fascist rallies. Whatever they called it here, it was the German Bund or something. The reason why they did that is because our system wasn't working so hot.
Yeah,
people went there and say maybe this other system's better. It turns out. The other system, you know, wasn't or isn't. I don't believe.
Yeah, Marxism is not the answer.
No, right? But I'm saying, I can't.
But there's a reason for the rage.
Well, there's definitely a reason why you might go listen to the guy.
Yeah.
I mean, right? your dough's all gone. Anyway, good stuff. I mean, the stuff you've brought out is, I don't know why you had all of a sudden that you stumbled upon this, but you did, and.
I've always been a contrarian, and I want to present stuff in my macro class that really hits home and reaches these kids.
Oh, I know what I need to ask you. Larissa asked me last week to ask you, because she's not doing money and banking anymore. If I were to go take a money and banking class like I did at Notre Dame and at the University of Chicago, would they still be teaching me reserve requirements, or are they teaching me these new capital rules?
I think they are. I haven't taught money and banking in a long time either, and this is the first time I've taught macro probably in 10 years. And I was surprised to see that stuff still in the PowerPoints.
That's what
caused me to go deeper because I know it changed.
I bet they're still not teaching these new requirements.
Well, I think what happens is teachers who write these textbooks, they're so invested in what they've written, and they want to minimize their effort, so they just kind of like prolong the narrative because they don't really want to put the effort in to change it.
All right, I would agree.
You get tenure and you sit on your laurels, right?
Well, on something, on your paycheck.
Yeah.
Anyway, S&P futures down 5, Nasdaq futures down 47. We were up a little earlier. Again, the Fed meets today and tomorrow. The announcement tomorrow at a news conference. Our friends.
It's going to be 25, but I wouldn't be shocked if it's 50.
Yeah, me neither. Anyway, we'll know. Actually, we'll know Thursday morning. We'll know tomorrow afternoon. Ricky, nice job. Back tomorrow, Stocks and Jacks.
That's all, folks.
This is Bob Uecker saying thanks for watching.